Basically, what we're measuring with ESG ratings is a company's long-term resilience to financially relevant environmental, social, and governance risks. Our model is global, and it's industry relative.
Welcome to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. Today I'm talking to Megan Twing Eastman, Managing Director and Editorial Director for ESG and Climate Research at MSCI, the world's largest ESG ratings provider. Thanks for coming on the podcast today, Megan.
It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks.
So obviously ESG ratings are coming under fire in the media, certain other sources. We might start by talking about the origin of ESG ratings.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I actually go way back in this industry myself, to the late 1990s, not the very earliest days, but pretty close. And at that point, it was mostly thought of as research for socially responsible investing. There weren't ratings yet at that point. It was really about investors with ethical considerations wanting information about how companies were behaving themselves and where the trouble spots might be. So ESG ratings themselves, like the letter ratings that we see today that look at least on the surface a bit more like credit ratings, those became more prevalent after the financial crisis. And MSCI got into this game in 2010 when it bought a company called RiskMetrics, which in turn had acquired a number of different ESG research providers shortly before that, including KLD, which is one that I came up with in Boston. And that's how I came to be at MSCI. And the emergence of these ratings as ratings rather than scores or assessments or whatever around that time, I think that was an important inflection point for this industry because it signaled a shift toward a wider understanding and at the same time more supporting research evidence that these ESG issues could be financially material and that investors needed to be looking at them whether they cared about the ethical stuff or not. And, you know, over the last decade or so, decade plus, it's been clearer and clearer that this is true, both because we've now got some pretty considerable real-world track records to illustrate it, investment track records, and I think also because issues like climate change have started to just make the financial relevance really apparent. It's quite in your face at this point. And so a lot of mainstream investors have realized it would be foolish not to look at this information. But, you know, also, we're here to talk about ESG ratings today, but I think it is also worth pointing out that investors have a lot of reasons to look at ESG information, of which ratings are one type, because ratings are far from the only sort of ESG information investors might want or need. And it all depends on their objectives. So if you want to understand how a company is positioned with regard to stuff that's financially relevant, ESG ratings from MSCI or another ratings provider are a good tool for that job. But, you know, if you want to know how much a company is warming the planet or what positive external impacts it's having or if it's involved somehow in some line of business that you object to, that's not really what ratings are designed to do. And of course, MSCI and other research and data houses provide this other sort of information, and a lot of investors do use it. But I think that fact often gets a little bit lost in the discussion as people do naturally tend to focus on the ratings, maybe because they are this one kind of simple, seemingly simple signal.
Is that part of the issue when you look at some of the criticism towards ESG ratings, that there's a misconception around what ESG ratings should be used for, what the purpose is? There's a belief that ESG ratings is going to tell you how good a company is, etc. But in reality, it's like what you're saying, the focus of ESG ratings is on financial materiality, risk management, something that doesn't really look at the full impact of a company in terms of the wider world. It's more focused on the financial metrics.
Right. And that is by design. They are designed to focus on financial relevance. And with our ratings, they do that very well. We've tested them. We've done the research studies. And, you know, they're not perfect. No model is, but they work. And that means that they're a useful tool for any and all investors who want to make sure they've got that full picture of financial risks and opportunities. But, you know, you mentioned other kinds of impacts and externalities, and the fact that the ratings don't focus on those doesn't mean we don't think they're important. It's just that there are these issues where there isn't currently some kind of transmission channel for them to become financially material to companies. And so those issues can matter very much, especially to the people who are affected by them. And there are lots of investors who factor these things into their investment decisions, but they do it for different reasons. And as I alluded to a moment ago, you know, we have data sets and assessments that are designed with those purposes in mind. And it really is a matter of just choosing the right tool for the job. You know, ratings are a hammer, right? And if that's the only tool you have, you might want to use it for everything. But in fact, there are other tools and better tools for different kinds of jobs.
Okay. And so if we look at the ESG ratings that MSCI provide, behind that, there's a methodology, and all rating agencies will speak to the importance of understanding their methodology. What are the things that people should know about the methodology that MSCI uses?
Sure. I'll try to keep this pretty high level. It does get complicated as you get into the details, but basically what we're measuring with ESG ratings is a company's long-term resilience to financially relevant environmental, social, and governance risks. Our model is global, and it's industry relative. And those three things are basically the first things we tell anybody about it. It's about financial relevance, it's global, and it's industry relative. And what that means is that we're looking at companies through a global model, but in comparison to other companies that are in the same industry. And that means, because we're looking at the most financially relevant risks for each industry, that these can be quite different from one industry to another. That will make a certain amount of intuitive sense, I think. You know, a mining company needs to pay a lot of attention to things like toxic emissions and worker health and safety and relations with surrounding communities. But those aren't at all the most significant issues for, say, an internet services company. You know, they've got to be thinking much more about privacy and data security and talent management and that sort of thing. So we look at different issues for different industries, depending on what's most likely to materialize in ways that will affect a company financially. And then just to drill down a tiny bit more, we look at how each individual company is exposed to those issues. We know they're relevant for the industry, but depending on what a specific company does exactly compared to its peers and where exactly it does that, what's the regulatory environment, what is the supply of water look like, what are community relations like, that sort of thing, the amount of risk that it has compared to its peers could be different. So the issues are specific to the industry, and the ratings themselves are industry relative. And if you could get two top-rated companies in two different industries, and it doesn't mean that they do all the same things. It means that they both do the best at managing what's most important to those industries compared to other companies in those industries.
Okay. And I think that's where one of the misconceptions around kind of ESG ratings being some sort of kind of ranking system on how good companies are, because obviously we would have seen some of the news stories coming out of the recent news that Tesla was not included in an index, and the index included Exxon, the fossil fuel company, and you know that caused a lot of uproar. And what you're saying is that the comparison is relative to other companies within their industry, but also it goes beyond just the end impact of the company. It's how the company is being run, and there's various factors that are important for each industry.
That is exactly right. So with Tesla, this was not MSCI's index that you're referring to, but yeah, we have indexes that use the ESG ratings. We have indexes that use the ESG ratings to construct them. And they may, in some of those cases, choose, you know, the better rated industries in each sector, or in each industry, so that they don't lose any industry exposures. They stick to a certain level of tracking error and that kind of thing. And so you're looking at auto companies compared to auto companies, and oil and gas companies compared to oil and gas companies.
Okay. So if somebody, because a lot of the time say, oh, you don't want to invest in fossil fuels, you don't want to do this. It's all kind of, it's viewed, ESG is viewed as something that is exclusionary. Whereas let's say an investor doesn't want to make any exclusionary decisions, and they say they want to hold an allocation in line with the index to fossil fuels, for instance. What ESG ratings can help them with is to select the best companies from an ESG perspective within that sector, effectively.
Within that sector, that's right. And again, with this focused on the issues that are likely to become financially relevant to the companies in that sector. So, okay, Yeah, you can't infer from a rating that it's that the company is somehow objectively good or bad, whatever that might mean to you specifically. Different people have different ideas about this. You can't necessarily draw conclusions about what it's doing about any specific individual issue, but you can infer how it compares to its peers at managing those financially relevant issues. So, you know, whether that's product safety or carbon emissions or human capital development or something else. And, you know, I would say it's entirely reasonable to conclude from a rating like this that a company with a better rating within its sector, within its industry, is managing those relevant issues better and is therefore likely having less negative impact than other companies in the industry. Fewer workers injured, fewer product recalls, lower emissions, and probably more positive impact too, you know, better talent management, more diversity, that kind of thing. But again, it's in that industry context.
Okay. And another misconception that I see often is this idea of an ESG label. So you'll see articles saying, oh, look, these companies just want an ESG label, these funds, etc. And the reality is that if you look at the ESG ratings, there's a distribution of ratings. So there's a very small percentage that are in that top category of ESG ratings. And I suppose the majority are within somewhere around the middle. So can you maybe talk to that fact that there is a distribution of ratings and it's not just a case of, oh, look, we've put a stamp on a company and they're now ESG approved?
Yes, for sure. So before I do that, maybe I just take a quick step back because I think it is important in thinking about ESG, ESG investing, ESG funds, ESG companies to be clear, you know, what unit we're talking about. So if we're talking about ratings of companies, I think that's quite clear. You can also have ESG ratings of funds and you have funds that describe themselves in different ways. You have indexes that are ESG indexes, and there are different methodologies for all of those things, and they might all use the word ESG, but they don't all necessarily mean the same thing. So to be clear here, I'm talking about the ESG ratings, which may be used by investors for a number of different ways, but thinking about just the universe of companies that we rate. Yes, you're absolutely right. There aren't that many at the top or at the bottom. Most companies tend to fall in the middle, even though we do not force an even distribution or a bell-shaped curve. The ratings, they're industry relative, so the companies that do the best come out on top and the companies that do the worst compared to their peers come out in the bottom. And then everybody else sort of falls in the middle, but it's not always very evenly distributed. And then to answer your question more, I've been in this field over 20 years, and I think we have seen a lot of progress from companies as investors have paid more attention and the public's become savvier, and companies themselves in many cases have come to recognize that environmental and social and governance issues can have very real financial implications. So I can say that over the last couple of decades, the landscape has shifted pretty considerably. But I would say there's a couple things to note here. First, there's still a long way to go for lots of companies to be really managing even the most financially relevant risks well. And then second, the progress that we have seen as companies have gotten better at this, it's not evenly distributed across all firms or across all regions by any means. But also, and I think maybe more importantly, the issues and the way these issues present risks and opportunities and the means that are available or in some cases necessary for companies to manage them, those haven't been standing still at all. It's extremely dynamic. Just as an example, 20 years ago, nobody in this field was thinking that hard about privacy and data security. And then people thought, well, maybe it's for internet companies. And now you look at it, it's relevant for all kinds of different business models. And if you get it wrong, it can be really quite expensive. The regulatory environment keeps changing. People's expectations continue to change. The technology continues to change. The dangers continue to change. All of this. And that's just, you know, one example of an issue. So it's not like companies or whole industries can just kind of tick things off the ESG to-do list and call it a day and figure they're done. You know, we're talking about what is financially relevant, how well they're managing it, how well they're doing that relative to their peers. So if you've got an industry where some companies are doing a lot better, then the ones that aren't are going to get lower and lower ratings over time because the goalposts are moving. And as investors get more savvy, the way things can become financially relevant also shifts. You start to think about reputational issues and access to capital and things like that. So it's really, really dynamic, and it's definitely not a case where a company can just tick a couple of boxes and say their ESG is covered and get a label for it.
And where they do move up the ratings distribution, or they do have ratings that are in the top categories, let's say, do they see more opportunity in terms of raising finance when they need it? Does it make a difference to their bottom line?
The research is starting to indicate that yes, it does. We've done some of this ourselves, looking at cost of capital, and there are other outfits that have done it as well. So you've seen the emergence. I mean, thinking about something like green bonds is probably the go-to case where you can see that doing something more ESG friendly, so to speak, does pr make for a premium in raising capital. But also think about sustainability linked loans and that sort of thing, where companies are finding that doing better or improving over time can get them more favorable loan terms. In addition to attracting more capital, we see less volatility. We see higher valuations for companies that are better rated on these ESG in our ESG ratings model. So yes, I think that case is being made, has been made, and is being made more strongly month after month, year after year.
Okay. And in terms of, I suppose, one of the big issues you hear from critics is this divergence of ratings. So across the various ratings providers that exist, I know there's a couple of papers out there, but they look at the correlation of the ratings and relative to, let's say, government bonds or some other security, the ratings, the correlations can be quite low. So people point to the fact, well, look, we can't trust the ESG ratings because, you know, they're not all saying the same thing. What's your view on that divergence?
So my view is that that's actually a feature rather than a bug at this point in the progression of maturity of the industry. It really is still pretty early days. And at MSCI, generally, we don't think that pushing for greater convergence in the ratings across different ratings providers would be a good idea because, you know, these models are still very much in development. And I just described a moment ago how dynamic the environment is in terms of how issues emerge and evolve. We think our model's pretty good, but we know it's not perfect. We still enhance it every year to reflect how the world is changing. And I'm sure that this is also true at our competitors. There's an awful lot of work still going on in industry and academia and so forth to figure out what matters most and how best to measure it. And I think you'd really see that progress slow down if you didn't have this freedom to continue innovating. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that while generally, I think most ESG ratings that are out there are focused on this financial relevance angle, they still reflect different views. And this is related to what I just said a moment ago about, you know, trying to figure out the best way to measure things and understand it best. And so the fact that there are different views available to me and to us at MSCI seems beneficial because it allows investors to identify the models that are most in line with their own thinking and understanding. Now, all that being said, we do think it could be quite useful to have more standardization in the industry and things like the language and the definitions that we all use and quality procedures and codes of conduct and that sort of thing. Because while we believe it's useful to the market to have different views and innovation and new models and so forth, some assurance to investors that whatever they're getting is based on sound practices of minimum standards and that sort of thing could be very, very could be very beneficial. And that's a message that we're sharing with regulators as we speak to them as well. I spend a lot of time myself these days speaking with regulatory bodies in different jurisdictions to help them understand what ESG ratings are and how they're different from things like credit ratings that they might be more familiar with and how they're used as well as how they're put together.
You mentioned you talk to the regulatory bodies. Are you able to say what kind of knowledge that exists within these regulatory bodies when it comes to the subject of ESG and responsible investment?
Well, I'd say it's difficult to generalize. An awful lot of them are coming from a perspective of thinking about credit ratings and how they've regulated credit ratings in the past. And so, you know, oftentimes they're coming to us saying, can you come in and talk to us and help us understand better what it is that you do and how you do it and how it's different? So, you know, in some cases, it's simple things like understanding that, you know, credit ratings are typically an issuer pays model, whereas ESG ratings are often, but not always, an investor pays model. That's the case for us. It's not the case comprehensively throughout the industry. So it varies by jurisdiction, and frankly, it varies by the individuals within the regulatory bodies. So there's quite a lot of discussion and education going on, and I think there's a fair understanding that they need to understand this industry better than they do before drafting new rules.
Yeah. And if you think about the methodology being slightly different, I guess, across rating agencies, and you mentioned the benefit of some sort of flexibility in terms of innovation, is there the potential maybe to think about setting a minimum standard, let's say, so that across each rating agency, there's not a complete standardization, but there's somebody, let's say like an advisor or an investor, can see across all of the different rating agencies something that's consistent. So it's kind of almost thinking to the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, you know, where 20% of the indicators will give 80% of the information. Is there some minimum standard that everybody could kind of be agreed on that would help advisors and other capital allocators?
I think you could absolutely have standards about, you know, ensuring that your thing does what it says on the tin, right? That what you describe is in fact what you're doing, and that there's clarity. A good deal of the confusion in this industry, I think, comes from the fact that people use the same words and mean different things by them. And so if you could come to some standard descriptions, I think, for example, about what the SEC in the US is proposing these days about fund names. Now, that's different from ratings. It's about funds, but the principle is the same. You know, what is this thing solving for? What question is it attempting to answer? And how is it attempting to do that? So if you have that information and it's presented in consistent ways about what the objectives are and what the methodologies are and that sort of thing, I think that could be immensely helpful.
So transparency and authenticity are really the kind of two important pillars when it comes to thinking about ESG ratings and the application of these frameworks.
Very much so.
And what do you think in terms of the direction of ESG ratings, if regulators do become more involved, do you think it's going to change things dramatically, or is it because they're really in the early days that nothing's going to change in the near term?
I think it's very early days still to be able to predict what direction it's going to go. At MSCI, we talk to regulators and investors in all the major regions of the world. And so the conversations that we're having with the EU Commission or the FCA in the UK or the SEC or in Singapore or Japan, there's some areas of convergence and there are areas of divergence and there are different stages in the process. So I really would hesitate to make any solid predictions there.
Okay. And I suppose you mentioned around the clarity in terminology that's been used, you know, here ESG investing, sustainable investing, climate investing, all of these different terms used synonymously when they mean very much different things. And one of the things with ESG ratings is this confusion with climate ratings, and that, you know, if somebody has a poor climate rating, they should have a poor ESG rating. But obviously climate is just one impact of the one factor within the environmental pillar. Is that another issue that keeps coming up for you as a rating agency?
That is definitely an issue that keeps coming up, both in the press, as you've said, but also questions from regulators, from our clients, wanting to understand how it works. So you're correct in saying in an ESG rating model, climate, and there are different elements of climate change, right? Different ways for different industries and different business models that can materialize. in some industries, that takes a lot of weight in the model, but not 100% of it anywhere. You know, we're still looking at corporate governance for every company across the board, because you can have the best climate plan in the world, but if you haven't got sound corporate governance structures and practices, it's going to be that much harder to implement it over the long term, that sort of thing. And we find that climate maybe is sort of the issue where we get asked about this most frequently. It's very top of mind, and for good reason, but different investors have their own different kind of favorite issues or issues that they're most concerned about. And those questions come up as well. You know, well, why don't you put more weight on this thing or that thing for this industry, or in general, why isn't this universal? And that's where we come back to the financial relevance, the industry focus of the model and what it is. We try to be very clear about what question we're trying to answer here, and that it is a holistic look at the relatively small number of things that matter most. So it's not single issue, but it's also not everything.
So I suppose one of the questions from advisors and other decision makers is saying, okay, that's fine. There's ratings provided. There's a distribution of ratings. But what does that mean to me? Do I infer from this rating that there's an extra risk here? And should I be taking that into account? And I suppose from their perspective, they're saying to me, well, show me examples that this has actually made a difference, that you've been able to identify certain risks that would not have otherwise been included, to make sure that it helps from a risk management perspective or a return perspective.
So when we're looking at this, we do a lot of this research ourselves in-house, and we often use our indexes as kind of a base body universe of companies to be looking at. And so we've done research where we have, for example, compared over 10 years, companies that have had the highest ratings, say the top quintile, versus those that have the lowest ratings, bottom quintile, and then compared how likely they are to have had major stock drawdowns. And we find that, and you can break that down for E issues, S issues, G issues, or even specific individual issues. And you see pretty consistently that those companies that are more poorly rated have been more poorly rated over time, have had multiple times more frequent major drawdowns. And here I'm talking, you know, 70, 80, 90% value. So it's not huge numbers, but the incidence, the pattern is quite consistent there. We can look at the valuation of companies and see what happens over time with the companies that are higher rated, lower rated, and those that have been improving or worsening, and see that you get similar kinds of results where you get the higher valuation for companies that are have the better ratings. And we're able to use the other models that are available to us at MSCI, for example, the factor models, the risk models, to actually pull that apart, decompose it, and figure out where the results are coming from and say, yes, this is actually related to ESG and not some other style factor or other unintended bet. So those more aggregate studies where we're looking at a large number of companies across industries, across regions, across time, I think provide the most compelling evidence to us that these are in fact useful.
Okay. So I suppose the important takeaway is that this is additional information that capital allocators can include, a bit like using certain valuation models. They need to decide what's preferential for them.
And, exactly right. But nobody should be making investment decisions based solely on an ESG rating. That would be silly. They'd be missing all sorts of other information on the financials. But just as you said, it's a piece of information. You don't look at just one single financial ratio either, right? You don't look at just a credit rating. And so all of these things come together in a mosaic, and different investors are going to weight them or treat them in different ways depending on what their particular constraints or objectives are.
Yeah, and I suppose there's no easy path either. Everyone just wants to take the headline number. I think the message also is that you need to understand the methodology, what's behind the rating. And over time, I suppose, as capital allocators put more effort into that in terms of understanding it, they'll be able to infer more from those ratings rather than just taking the headline number.
Yes, and I would say we have a large number of really rather sophisticated institutional clients who may not use the top line rating at all, but then start to break it down and look at the trends and the different scores and so forth, and they may reweight things or use components or what have you. We have investors who do everything from a simple exclusion of triple C rated companies or requiring extra due diligence on those to having the ratings baked into their discount models or other sorts of projections and decision-making tools. So there's really quite a range.
Okay, great. Well, I think that's an excellent insight into ESG ratings. Megan, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. If you'd like to share any thoughts or feedback on today's episode, then you can email me at vincent@theesgfactor.com. Also, if you'd like to see the making of more independent content like this, you can join our Patreon community online. Just visit theesgfactor.com.